Hello, everyone. This is Kathleen Francis, your host of Wise Women on the PRN Voices. And I'm very excited today again to bring such a wonderful guest on the show and someone that I can definitely relate to in many ways. She's coming in from Sweden today, and her name is Judith Bork. She is an award-winning filmmaker, author, and holistic therapist. And after graduating from the Massachusetts College of Art with a bachelor's degree in fine arts, she traveled to India to become a teacher of transcendental meditation, and then she worked within the Beatles guru Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, his inner circle, for a couple of years. And she subsequently trained as a teacher of reevaluation counseling and then introduced that method to her country of residence in Sweden. So she's a very accomplished woman with a great many wonderful stories to tell. She has been a filmmaker and a sewing for need or sewing for greed, a documentary which was certainly something on this work that is near and dear. It's a documentary on genetically modified seeds, the real patch atoms, and hot and cold mandala. So this was an experimental infrared film. And certainly on this PRN system, we know a great deal about the necessity to put our attention on eating food that is good for us and not food that is detrimental to us, as Gary Null has often had so many podcasts relating to this and very important information. She wrote the book Robes of Silk and Feet of Clay, and that was her first book and perhaps not the last. So we have a great many things to cover, again, delivering the important things that we consider wisdom to make people in their lives more effective and have a better life, a happier life, a longer life. And so that with that, please let me welcome Judith Bork. How
Thank
are you,
Judith? Kathleen. Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Yes. Now, here in Arizona, we are having quite a rainstorm. We've had an interesting winter. But how are you doing there in Sweden? What is the weather like in Sweden?
The weather has been strange here as well, because it'd be very, very much a lot of snow. And then it would freeze and it would be very, very slippery out, and everyone has been falling. And
oh, my.
And then all of a sudden it melts and it all goes away. No snow at all. And then it comes back again. So it's been very like a seesaw, very much of a seesaw winter.
Mm-hmm. Well,
very annoying.
Yeah, well, I'm originally from a small town in Wisconsin. My brother informed me that back home in Duluth, I used to be a television weathercaster in Duluth, Minnesota, which is 100 miles from our, you know, little home. And the big mall there, the roof caved in because of the weight of the snow.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. They had 200 inches back there. So anyway, big shout out to all my family there in Wisconsin and the brave people that they are to continue to live there. But tell us about your early days. I too lived in India for 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have that certainly in common. Uh-huh. How long were you in India?
The first time I was in India for 5 months, but then I've been there a total of 6 times.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, my guru was Rajneesh Osho.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
He certainly, yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, his perspective on things was very different than what the Maharishi presented.
Yes.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience there?
Sure. I had started meditating my third year at university, and it really did wonderful things for me. After a few months, I realized that I was changing on some very deep levels. I became more creative. I was going to art school, and I thought, okay, I'm okay on technique, but I felt that I didn't have a lot of ideas or interesting ideas. And that changed with the meditation. And I felt a heart opening with the meditation. And also at that age, I had a very, very morbid fear of death. And that also lightened considerably from the meditation. And these were things that they had not talked about at the introductory lecture. They talked more about, improvement in grades and that sort of thing. But what had interested me at that first lecture that I went to was when they were talking about experiencing the source of thought. I thought that sounded absolutely fascinating. But at any rate, after about 3 months, as I said, I was noticing these changes in myself, and I had planned after university actually to work with emotionally disturbed children. I always had some kind of you could call it a do-gooder in me. I wanted to contribute something to society.
Yes.
I wanted to contribute something. But then when I noticed that the changes that I was going through were profound, and then I found out that you could become a teacher of meditation, I thought, this is so much faster. So much faster. And so then I just knew immediately, I want to become a teacher of transcendental meditation.
So I actually also got my, I also use that transcendental meditation as
you
well.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't miss much. I was like this avarice, I had to seek Yogi Bhajan was my first guru. And
okay.
I don't ever remember
No,
him.
No, don't know much about him. No.
Yeah. But I do use that meditation often still.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So
okay.
Continue, please.
Well, I applied and I got into the course and got busy with a waitress job, saving money to go to India. And I was just so excited about the whole concept. For me, Maharishi was a living prophet, you could say.
Yes.
He was a genuinely holy man alive in my lifetime. I thought that was such an exciting thought. I had been
yes.
raised Catholic, actually.
Me too.
But had been very disenchanted with the Catholic religion and left it, really, I would say, around the age of 16.
Wow.
When it just didn't make sense to me. So I'm looking forward to this, to meeting Maharishi, and so you could say I'm thinking that he is something like Jesus, or at least an apostle, a divine human being. And
mm-hmm.
as I said, that was just tremendously exciting for me. And then we got there and we were all called down to his villa. And everyone, the whole class, was waiting there to meet him with great expectation. He walks into the room and says, "Jai Gurudev." And that meant hail to his teacher, actually. But that became the way that we greeted each other. If you said hello, it was Jai Gurudev. You said goodbye, it was Jai Gurudev. So he comes in and he tells us that he's going to meet us, each one of us individually, out in the garden.
Wow.
And then he walks out of the room. I'm sitting right by the door and he says to me, "Come." And I asked the woman sitting next to me, "Did he mean me?" And she said, "I don't think so." So then the whole, everyone, we went around the room and I ended up being the last person because I was right by the door.
Mm.
So I went out to meet him. He was sitting behind a small table and I get there and he says, "What took you so long?" And I said, "Well, I had to wait my turn." He said, "I was waiting."
Oh.
And that immediately surprised me. I mean, it felt like I was, it felt from the very start, I was being treated as something special, someone special. And I was very, very surprised. Then we had a conversation about my background, about my parents, what they did, and what I had been studying, and all of that. And then we said goodbye. But then shortly after that, his assistants, who were called skin boys, they were called skin boys because they would throw down a skin of an animal for him to sit on wherever. So if he got up, they'd grab the skin and took it with to the next spot where he was going to sit down, and then they'd throw it down before he sat down. So they were called skin
Wow.
boys. So these were his assistants. They started to come and get me from my room to bring me to Maharishi.
Wow.
Yes, and the whole thing went very quickly. I remember especially he I went down to his villa, and he brought me down into like a cellar room that he had that he called his cave. And in the cave he had a little altar where he would perform a puja to his guru. And so we're in this room together, and he's asking me how things are with my meditation. And then after a minute, he starts to stroke my hair and my face. And it was first at that moment that it finally clicked. And I thought to myself, Maharishi is a man and I'm a woman.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I understood why he was interested in me. Before that, I really didn't get it.
I understand.
I did not
I
get it.
do.
And then,
Well, he was a very handsome man.
well, I thought he was handsome then. I did. But it had nothing to do really with being handsome. It was more his charisma, his incredible charisma, and
Oh,
his
yes.
that incredible spiritual power. I mean, he was an unusual human being, without a doubt. He was an unusual human being. He had an amazing intellect, and he was an excellent teacher of meditation.
Well, he had such tremendous impact on the world. And then when the Beatles brought, him into such a profound posture, and it truly did make such a difference to the Western world, no question.
It did. I mean,
And
the
you were
Beatles,
part of that.
yes, the Beatles really did bring him to the West even more than he had been prior to that. So I, we initiated this love affair, and he initiated the love affair, and I complied. Our affair
I
was
mean,
not.
how could you say no?
Well, other people did. Other women did. I mean, in Marie in Mia Farrow's book, she writes how he, all of a sudden, she's in the cave with him, and all of a sudden he puts his arms around her, and she pushes him away. She immediately
Wow.
pushes him away and gets out of there. And I have often thought that that was a much healthier way to respond. But I felt chosen. I felt chosen.
Of course.
I don't know, I don't know, of course, but at any rate, I did. I felt very chosen. But he also said to me immediately that day in the cave, he said, "Don't tell anyone." That was the other part of that situation that made me realize that this is something more than a devotee guru relationship. So I agreed. I said, "No, I won't tell anyone." And we would meet in the night. I would sneak down to his house. I can't believe that I did that, that I actually managed that, because I was so afraid of the dark. I was so afraid of the dark.
Oh.
And also in India, you know, snakes and lizards and
I know, I live there.
Tigers, you know, scorpions.
Yes.
I can't believe that I managed that. But and then not only that, I was so afraid that someone would catch me going down to his villa. So I didn't wear my sandals, these flip-floppy sandals.
You went barefoot?
No, but I put a pair of woolen socks on and somehow managed to convince myself that that was some kind of protection. But, you know, that shows me when I think back at it, it just shows me how much this meant to me, how determined I was to be able to go to Maharishi and meet him when he wanted me to come.
Well, with such a high spiritual being with the, you know, the frequency that he carried. So, I mean, making love to him must have been extraordinary.
Well, many people have all kinds of ideas about that. you know, I was young and he was in just like an adolescent, you could say, because he had been celibate. He had been celibate for at that time, he must have been around 52 or something. He had been celibate for the greater part of his life.
Yes.
And so we were like a couple of teenagers, really.
Wow.
So there are people who, you know, think that, oh, want to know, was Maharishi into Tantra? And they have all these ideas about how especially spiritual it was. But of course, for me, it was because I was in love with him and he was my master.
Yes.
So for me, it was both a physical and a spiritual experience.
For sure.
For him, I think it was mostly physical. I don't know. What can you say is going on in another human
being? So you broke his celibacy.
I don't know. To this day, I don't know, Kathleen. I have heard stories about another woman before me. She is unfortunately dead now, so I cannot ask her. So I don't know. I don't know. I think that if I wasn't the first, I think I could have been the second.
Mm-hmm.
He was not an experienced lover. This was clear to me. He was.
Oh, wow.
No.
Interesting. Because, when, you know, I too had this kind of blessing favored situation with Osho.
You and Osho?
Well, no, let me rephrase that.
Yes.
Osho, I believe, was celibate, but I couldn't say, you know, and of course, everyone, the sensationalism of Osho was everybody was, you know, making love to everybody and there were orgies and there were. But I never participated in that. That was never my thing. However, I was chosen by Osho. I was there for just, you know, 2 weeks and I was called in the office and told that Osho wanted me to, you know, meet with him. Well, you know, so many of my friends were scrubbing floors for years and they were like, who are you, Kathleen? You know, and he gave me the name Dhyan Priya, and Priya means beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked me to produce his film and star in the musical that they had currently going there.
Oh my goodness, which was, I didn't know.
Yeah. And it was called Holly Go Lightly. It was about a girl from Hollywood. And of course, I just arrived. I was a girl from Hollywood. So he had me taking the lead of that musical and traveling around India. And then I did take on the project to do Zorba the Buddha, which he went into great detail about how he wanted the film made, and I managed to get the money together. And then Sheila, who was running the ashram, she made it so incredibly difficult and unfair that, you know, my finance people just couldn't agree to her terms. So sadly, that film did not get. Not that it can't still be made, because, you know, I feel his presence for sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as it happened, Kabir Bedi, who is an international, very famous in India and in Europe, He became my lover, and that was astonishing. He carried such a powerful spiritual. His father and mother were contemporaries of Gandhi. And so, you know, I mean, talk about a Kundalini experience. Yeah, that happened for sure when I was with Kabir. And Kabir is stunningly gorgeous. He's still alive and is a tremendous influencer still. I am still in contact with him.
Wow. Fantastic.
In India. Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, as I say, you and I have a lot of common ground, so to speak.
We do. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember feeling that, I mean, it was amazing just to be physically close with Maharishi. That was amazing to me. I mean, I was so happy.
And, yes. Well, sometimes, you know, just the tenderness or the genuine sense of attunement that you can have with someone, sometimes taking it to a sexual level isn't appropriate. It's, I don't know. It's, I'm still trying to figure that out. You know, because there can be such a tenderness just with an embrace.
That's right. I was divinely happy to just be that physically close to him.
Yes. And, you know, there is energy exchange that we're still discovering, I think. And, you know, and the journey continues. And of course, Osho promised us our enlightenment. And since you and I, and Michelle has been on our program, you know, the Wise Women program, and we know that we're all evolving in some very powerful ways. I know I can feel it, and there's an accelerated sense of my own evolution as a spiritual being. And I hate to say this, but I think I actually am moving into what looks or feels like an enlightened state. And it's very, it's a simple thing. Do you know what I mean? And it's not like something, it's like not like a destination and now, oh, I'm low, I'm enlightened. It is a process. It's a continuing process. And so, you know, everything I notice that comes into me, including today, is a kind of contribution for that ongoing expression of whatever this is that we're, you know, all in the midst of. And, you know, so there's so much talk about the one and trying to comprehend what does that mean. Michelle is always talking about we're all just cells in the same body. You know, we are all that connected. And it is difficult to really grok what that means. How is your sense of that?
Well, there are several things I want to comment that you mentioned. One is this whole thing of enlightenment that I just feel that there's so many ideas out there about enlightenment and what it is. And I mean, I have had experiences that I would describe more as, Maharishi used to describe it as cosmic consciousness. And those experiences I had when I was spending time with another guru. and also each one of the disciplines that I've gotten involved with, from dream work, studying your dreams, to shamanism, to meditation, each one of those has contributed a particular flavor of enlightenment, I would say, a particular flavor
well
of
said.
Spiritual evolution. And so I am less and less able to say that I really know what enlightenment means. I mean, I know what I have experienced myself, and then I hear what other people talk about, and it's all a rich array of different experiences. And then the other thing about, of course, the concept of oneness is one, is a part of shamanism as well, that everything is one. I mean, you and I are one, and you and the motorboat over there are one, and you and the motor are one, and
and the
it's
computer
all one.
Is one. And the AI is coming after us, so that we are definitely all one.
Yeah. But something that bothers me in the spiritual community is this striving after enlightenment.
Good point.
Because it becomes another ego trip. It becomes another thing that your ego gets attached to. And,
yes.
And this other guru that I was with for a while, where I had my experiences and retained some of that, I noticed afterwards there were these meetings and everyone was doing this and that to get into these states of consciousness. It would, whether it was from breathing or, you know, holding a certain position, or so everybody got more and more frantic about getting there.
Yes.
And yet that same guru said, which I really appreciated and liked, he said, one of the worst things you can do is to pretend that you're enlightened, to act like you're enlightened. It's a horrible existence. And that really sort of sank in. So those two aspects kind of got me turned off to the whole idea of enlightenment in a way, you know? And then I started to think more about, also because, I mean, I'm in the last quarter of my life. What became more important was, how am I using my time? How, going back to what I originally, and I have two grandchildren, and I think of them. I think of everything that's going on in the world.
Yes.
I want to be contributing something that will helpfully get them through this time.
Yes.
And get them through it in a good way. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that, but I want to try.
Yeah.
And of course, in India, there's this idea of, if you are enlightened, I mean, that's your sole contribution. You don't need to do anything else, because you're just spreading that incredible vibration of being.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but, I really do believe that each one of us does make a difference.
Yeah, but
really, I
for
do
some
believe
reason,
that.
There's a shift in, maybe it's my childhood and my Catholic upbringing. I don't know, Kathleen, but I just feel it's really, for me, I'm the type of person that I need to have a cause, if you know what I'm saying. I need to have something that feels meaningful.
Yes, I do understand.
And maybe I redefine that every day, you know? And that, of course, is also one of the aspects, I think, that brings people into a particular spiritual community. Let's say, whether it's the TM movement or the Osho movement, or it's that you get this great sense of community, and also that your guru has managed to convince you that you are contributing to the world. and then, you know, later on, I found out that maybe I need to define that more myself, rather than letting a guru define that for me. Maybe I need to define that and redefine it every single day of my life.
That's a very, very good point.
What is going to give my life meaning?
Right.
To me? I mean, the other day I had such a cute experience, and it just made me happy for so long. I was on the road, I was walking away from the grocery store, and I found a package of coffee on the road. So, you know, someone had obviously just dropped it. And then I saw this elderly woman walking over the street with her wagon, and it looked all tied up and everything. So I thought to myself, well, it couldn't be her, because her wagon is so neatly tied up. It couldn't have fallen out. So I kept walking along with, I picked it up and I walked along, and I'm thinking, you know, what am I going to do with this coffee? Because I don't drink that kind of coffee. And then I looked over, and she had crossed the street, but then she was still going parallel with me on the same street. So I thought, what the heck, I can ask her. So I said, did you just drop your coffee? And she said, oh, yes, yes, I did. It fell off the top of my. She was so happy to get her coffee. I mean, you know, these small
yes.
events of love and kindness.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It was such a sweet moment because we're so surrounded by all this sad news all the time of the wars and
correct.
The king and not only in on the real news, but in our movies and films, and it's
correct.
Just everywhere. So a little golden moment like that, I was so happy I could
for sure
coffee to her.
It's true. It's true. It's true. That's a lovely story.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like I hadn't really thought too much about, you know, enlightenment until just recently for some reason. And I remember when I finally, you know, left India and came back to this country. Well, because Osho was coming to this country, he was heading here, you know. And I remember a moment, you know how you have those little epiphany moments and you get this insight or whatever. And I remember thinking about him, and I know, you know, he was in such a high state of consciousness. I mean, the things that would come out of his mouth, and he was always so funny, which I just love. And so brutally honest and, you know, just telling it like it is, there was nobody like him, you know, there just wasn't. And that's why they killed him, you know, with the plutonium. But I remember saying to myself, he is enlightened and he is still just a man. He's still just a man.
Yes.
And, you know?
Yes.
And I don't know if I even completely got even what I was, but I remember thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I've been in very high states of consciousness, and the highest one really brought me to, it's all about self-love, and it's all about, what does that mean? And it's that acceptance of yourself. And it's very humbling, you know, when you get into that state of mind. Gary Null always talks about, well, Kathleen, you have to find your authentic self. It's like, yeah, okay, Gary, I am working on it.
Ow.
And there's somewhere digging around. I'm going to find it. But, I don't know, the journey. It is the journey. It is the journey. It is the journey, you know. And this, it's like the process, the constant process of comprehending, where are you really at? What's really going on in your life? What are you really doing? And the dance, I mean, it's in a way, I honestly, I think if I reached enlightenment, I would be living alone with my animals in a little cabin somewhere, maybe in the woods in Wisconsin. I don't know. But when I had my near-death experience, and, you know, Michelle was watching me through the whole thing, monitoring my soul to see where I was going, because she really didn't want me to leave. But, you know, you just, you get to the place where this extremely complex reality that we have to navigate, there's got to be a, you know, it's like a better place. I mean, I was talking to myself yesterday that I have been working for 7 days a week since I was 10 years old, you know, and it's like, okay, that is such a habituated pattern. That will I ever escape it? I used to feel just guilty to go and have fun, because when I was little, I was critically important to my family structure, because my dad had restaurants. And by God, they'd be up at 3 o'clock and I peeled the potatoes, I prepped all the salad, then I'd get wait on people, then I'd jump up on the stage and sing and entertain, and then I'd wash dishes, heavy dishes, till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and then pull myself out of bed and still be an honor student. You know, how I did it, I have no idea.
I think Americans are very hard workers. I really do.
Well, certainly the Italians. I mean, that was just, it was child abuse today. But, and I was, of course, I thought I'd be a nun. I was Catholic too, and blah, blah, blah. And it's just so disenchanting now to find the truth about what it really is there. And I mean, what do you do with that? I mean, I refuse. I've done like you. I've done so many. I've been born again 3 times and baptized and blah blah blah. But the generic God. It's just the generic God, whatever that is. We've seen a million names for it, right? What do you think?
About the generic God.
Yeah.
Even God, I'm redefining all the time. I just have this deep feeling that there is a divine creator out there and inside of me at the same time,
Yes, right.
and that I have an amazing amount of love for that creator or creator.
Yes.
And of course, I've given up the picture of the old man with a white beard.
Right.
But I think what's happening is I'm starting to give up to try to define that, and I'm just accepting that that love is there, and it feels good. So that's where I am about that. But another thing you were talking about is how you were thinking that Osho was enlightened, and yet he was this human being, and that really, a lot of that theme is in my book. And what happened for me was, at that young age, having this experience with Maharishi, I had to really, that forced me to think about that issue for my entire life.
Of course.
And even though I've written the book, I certainly feel at greater peace with the whole thing now that I've written the book. But I can still say that sort of, like, wow, amazing. How could it be? How could it be that these different personality aspects could exist in the same person? Of his incredible charisma and his incredible intellect and his incredible abilities as a teacher and his love of wisdom. I mean, he loved wisdom, and he loved researching the meaning of different texts, spiritual texts, and all of that.
Oh, sure.
And that very same man could be so cruel. He could be so cruel. He could really just use people. And you, if you had a lot of money, and then all of a sudden your money was gone, and you're done. I don't need you anymore.
Wow, really?
So, I mean, I saw some very, what should I say? I saw some powerful strengths and some powerful weaknesses, which of course is true for all of us who are human. We all have our
Yes,
strengths and our weaknesses. It's just
yes,
that his were so huge and on both
yes.
fronts, and I think also that's the hard part for people with my book. I mean, those who read it, many have written to me afterwards and thanked me for coming out with my story, and I'm so grateful that they have. But I
Now,
can see that everyone.
was it also true that you feared for your life?
Yes, especially in the beginning. Especially in the beginning, because there was this young woman who, she actually, I actually spoke to the woman who was the girlfriend after me, and it was thanks to this middle woman who had had some experiences with Maharishi, not quite the same as mine or the woman who came after me, but she, the whole thing had, she was very angry, and the whole thing had upset her quite a lot. And she went back to the States and talk to her parents about it, and she was also starting to talk to other people in the movement about it. And all of a sudden, she was dead. She was gone.
Wow.
She was in a plane crash, and a small plane crash where they were out looking for land for a new academy, and everyone in the plane went down. So that scared me. And
oh,
at
yes.
that time, I believed that Marshy could basically just wipe me out with his thoughts.
Yes, yes. Well, I believe that that's true. I've seen it in my own life. So,
well, what helped me,
and especially when, you know, when you're that, you know, powerful in, you know, and I've known other, you know, high guru type people, I can give you experiences. There was, you know, a roommate of mine in Los Angeles, who was really, and he wanted everybody to be celibate. And then he was having affairs with the women. And I'll tell you what, and I was trying to tell you, Donna, I said, listen, this guy's not a good guy. Cause you know, I was pretty seasoned, but do you know, he appeared in my frickin' bedroom? He did. I was sleeping. And then I heard this music, and I was told, leave you, Donna, alone. And I went, okay. All right. I mean, they have power. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What got me through that, though, was that I had started to read the Seth books. Are you familiar with the Seth books?
Very much so.
Roberts? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember Seth would talk about situations where, you know, someone was murdered, and the relationship between the murderer and the person and the victim, and that this was still something that had been on another level in another dimension agreed upon.
Yes.
And that did not mean that alleviated these people from, you know, it didn't remove the tragedy. It didn't mean that the murderer did not do something wrong. It was just his way of explaining that there's another aspect of this. And he also mentioned having the belief systems of a victim. So I just I decided that I was not going to have the belief systems of a victim. I decided that I wanted to get really clear on the fact that I was not ready to die, and I was going to get through this, and I was going to be safe. So I managed to develop new belief systems and was able to let go of the fear. And that lesson has come to me over and over again in lifetime, that when I focus on fear, when I focus on fearful happenings, fearful events, and focus too much on darkness and darkness patterns and people who are dark and that whole thing, attack, then, you know, that type of experience starts to come more and more. So I just realized that's not where I want to be putting my focus. And yeah, that has worked for me. Fortunately, that has worked for me. And I hope it's something that would work for other people as well.
Well, that's powerful for you to say that you can make a decision, because most people, and I struggle with it myself, I've come to the understanding that I have certain things that haunt my consciousness, and I try to battle to destroy those patterns I don't want, but I'm now trying to just sidestep them. I know they're there, and to protect myself and whoever else in my sphere from the damage that it can cause, then I need to create the circumstances in a shifted way, so that I'm not at the effect of it, because I know I am an extremely powerful manifester. You know, quick little story. My mother, you know, killed herself when I was 5, and my father married a countess. So I had a stepmother who was a countess, and I had 2 stepsisters, and I had to work, and I got all the hand-me-downs. I didn't identify with Cinderella. I identified with the fairy godmother. I did. And I
Perfect.
swear to God, I have my magic wand and I do stuff. I just have the
Perfect.
ability, if people need something, I'm the go-to person. So I
Perfect.
laugh at myself, But that's how, isn't it just fascinating just to be yourself? You know what I mean?
Consciousness is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And of course we both love Michelle to pieces. She's such a contributor to so many of us.
Yes, she
And I
is.
told her, yeah. So she said, you can't leave. And I said, well, no, if you leave, you're gonna hear from me. I'm not doing this alone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Well.
difficult when our very dear friends are spread out all over the world. It's Michelle's over in the States and I'm over here in Sweden and we have a time difference and can't
Yes,
always talk
yes.
on the phone.
Yeah.
It's great reassurance to be able to talk to your girlfriends on the telephone, I've discovered.
Oh, it is. And I know Michelle is very well known over there in Sweden, and I know that you've helped her a great deal, which is wonderful. And what about your own work? You do work yourself. How can people connect with you? How can they buy your book?
I have a homepage. It's the title of the book, Robes of Silk, Feet of Clay.com, and they can order the book from me there. If you order it from my site, it's more expensive than it is on Amazon, but I can sign it personally to people.
Oh,
So that's one advantage. And
So that's that your website is Robes of Silk, Feet of Clay
yes. Dot com.
.com.
And the other thing is that they can order the audiobook, which I won a prize for. They can order that from my site. It's also may be cheaper if you do it through Amazon. But if you order the audiobook from my site, then I can give you a link to so you can get to see the pictures because that's what you don't see when you buy an audiobook. You don't get any
Right.
pictures. But I will give purchasers of the audiobook a link so they can look at all the pictures that are in the book.
Wow. Amazing.
And then I have a site for my other spiritual work. I still teach that meditation, although I don't call it TM for legal reasons. But I teach meditation as Maharishi trained me, at a much lower price. And I can do that online actually too. I've done that online. So then to go to my holistic site, it is Judith's Alternative Therapies in Swedish.
Oh my.
Judith's Alternativa
Oh. Okay. Well,
And
maybe
so I don't know
maybe
how
we
we
can
met.
put that. Yeah. But so the best way is to go to your website.
Yes, if they're interested in meditation or even shamanism, I've also taught online. And then I also teach classes in working with your dreams, how you can use your dreams to get spiritual guidance for what's going on in your life. That's another huge a huge chapter in my life. Maharishi came to me actually about a year and a half before he died and asked me if I was going to leave him in the dark. And that was actually the first opening for the book. That was the first okay, what do you mean? And then I studied the rest of the dream for quite a while and finally got out of it that he wanted me to help him clear up the poor karma that he'd left behind in not coming
Oh,
to his truth. That
yeah,
he
bad karma will kick us in the ass.
yeah he didn't he He, according to a spiritual counselor that I went to, does want to come back and does want to assist humanity again. And he did not want to have to bring that karma back in with him. So it was more or less a request from his side to let's get this all out in the open, as I understood it, as I understood it. So that helped me with that part of the decision. I didn't have to feel guilty about breaking my promise to not tell. So yes, dreams.
Well, I have a lot, from the time I was a child, I've had precognitive dreams. In fact, I have this recurring dream that I had just this morning where I'm lost and I can't find my way. And it's that just started happening, I don't know, maybe the last year or so.
Okay. Well, there's a lot going on for us now. There's a lot going on for us, and everything is being redefined. And I feel even my spirituality is being redefined. I mean, just everything is being redefined, and I think it's really easy to feel lost today.
Yes, for sure,
And maybe even that's one of the reasons why I think it's really important for us to build community now. I mean, for
Oh, yeah.
anyone who's been in a following or a sect, how great it was to be able to be with other people that shared the same interests that you had.
That's everything.
But now, since everything is being redefined, then what are your groups? Who are your groups? Who makes up your spiritual family? But I just think it's really, really important for all of us to be building community, building new community. It feels like that's part of the challenge of today too, that the community that we were a part of maybe 15 years ago, it's not going to be the same community that we
Absolutely.
have now. So now you and I are starting a new community today. The
Yes.
Kathleen Judith community.
Oh, gosh, I tell you. Yeah, well, I have a little shop here in Arizona, and people have said it's not a shop, it's a vortex, and I do seem to attract interesting people. And
Lovely. I'd love to come shopping there.
yes, I'd love to have you come
Except
for
it's so
sure.
far away. I have to fly to
It's
get
just a
there.
little jaunt. Yeah, the
I
whole.
might come over in a dream.
But the precognitive dreaming that I had as a child, that's what caused me at that early age to, if I just had a dream and then it shows up tomorrow or next month and I know I dreamt it, exactly what I dreamt. Well, of course, I started thinking, what the heck? What is reality? As a child, I remember, and then my quest for, evolution, I remember saying to my friends, we were actually being bad. We were stealing strawberries from my neighbor's big yard. And we were maybe, I don't know, six or seven. And I remember saying to them, I'm going to turn over a new leaf.
Interesting.
And that began my quest for personal development, right? Oh my gosh.
Interesting. Interesting. Now that is amazing about dreams, isn't it? People often they'll say, you're the meaning of that dream, it was just something in your consciousness, or it's like, taking out the garbage at night, you're just working through it, processing it. But when you have those precognitive dreams, that is pretty
I mean,
that's pretty hard to treat
yeah, I mean,
nonchalantly, isn't it?
and because we have them, we know for sure. I mean, I don't know, maybe people in my family thought I was weird, but I'd find things that were lost, and I knew when people were dying, and I knew when I was going to have a car accident, and
Oh
I mean, it
dear.
was one, and then I knew when my life partner was going to be with somebody else, and I just woke up and I told him, okay, I know you're, so what are you going to do? It is what it is.
You should join a dream research program, Kathleen.
I didn't know there were.
Oh, there are a lot of people doing research on dreams and in the scientific community. And I think you should join one of those because You just write down your dream. You wake up in the morning, write down your dream, and
Yeah.
then they'll see what happens. I
Interesting.
mean, that would be pretty interesting proof if you could establish a pattern of that, of the
Oh,
precognitive
that,
dreams.
yeah, that's true. You're right about that.
So
That,
what
yeah,
is
and
that
that would,
telling us about
yeah.
consciousness and the whole thing?
Yes, that's the point. That's the point. And I feel truly, I do feel humbled by the grace that I've been given my whole life by so many extraordinary people, powerful people. Every single time I was in, I mean, most certainly Osho, the grace. I mean, he was always kind to me and never took advantage of me ever, ever. And I remember, someone else that was also a follower said to me, just remember the grace you were given and honor yourself. And I'm sure that you feel the same.
Kathleen, why did his movement become so focused around free sex?
Because it was such a big issue, and he, if anybody read his little book on sex, it was all about get it out of your system. Go do whatever you do so that you can just let it go. I've been pretty, Kabir was really my last lover, but what I would consider my lover, and that was, what, I don't know, 25 years ago. So if celibacy is the pathway to enlightenment, I'm on my way. Oh, yeah.
Well,
Anyway.
Maharishi and Osho certainly were on opposite paths there,
Yeah, definitely.
but Maharishi followed more the traditional views in India about. And actually, it's not, I mean, I'm certainly not an expert on it, but it doesn't seem to be so much an ethical issue as an energetic issue. I mean, Maharishi said to me, he was so upset with himself the night after we had made love for
Oh,
the first
he
time.
was
Yes,
remorseful.
he was very upset with himself. He
Wow.
canceled all the lectures on the course and everything. And then
Wow.
he never did that. And
Wow.
and so then I went down to his villa, and I went into his bedroom, and he was surrounded by these other celibate monks, and one was giving him massage on his feet, and it was like,
Wow.
I'm thinking to myself, my God, what's going on? And then I just
You were
left.
the temptress, Judith.
Are you sick? And he said, don't you understand? The energy is used to going up. So
Well,
he,
my dear.
yeah, he was very upset with himself. He was.
Oh, I think you and I need to have another session on wise women, my dear, because we are out of time. It just wasn't enough time. I can't tell you how thrilled I was to have you as my guest today.
Well, this hour went
Yeah.
very quickly, I have to say. Yes, we have a lot to talk about, Kathleen.
Yes, certainly have a lot of common ground.
We certainly have a lot of common ground. I can hear that. I can hear that.
And my gratitude to Michelle Phillips for introducing us and having this event happen. So I thank you so very much for being on Wise Women.
Thank you
And
for inviting me.
oh,
This
my
is fun.
pleasure. It was fun. Great fun.
I
I hope
hope
to see
somebody
you.
else thinks, besides just you and me, thinks it was
Yeah,
fun
right.
too.
Let's hope so.
I guess.
Oh,
Okay.
okay. All
Namaste.
right, sweetheart. Namaste, my darling.